let me in. Shibba, shibba. I want to be closer to you. Shibba, shibba. Open up your soul. Shibba, shibba. Let me find that part of you. The part that nobody ever knew.
Let me touch your.
Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something. Now, y'all know that The Marsh always has amazing shows going on there. Today's guest proves that rule in infinity. I'd like to welcome the playwright and performer of Night Driver, Pearl Ong. Hello.
Hi. I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
So, Pearl, before we get started about the play, how long have you been a performer?
I started about 5 years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What did you do before that?
I was a software engineer.
Oh, wow. So what made you make the transition?
Well, I retired, for one thing. Uh-huh. But before that, I started taking a class at the Marsh with David Ford.
Okay.
And it was called Creating and Performing Your Own Work.
Uh-huh.
And I wasn't really thinking about performing, but it was part of the class, and there was a class performance. So at the end of it, I had to perform what I wrote. And then I was invited, somebody was there, Bruce Packman was there from Solo Sundays, and he invited me to perform at Stageworks on Valencia Street. So that's kind of how it started. I really thought I was only going to do it once for the class performance.
Wow, so you were just taking this as something to do after retirement?
Well, before retirement, but something to do that was different. I'd taken a number of writing classes over the years.
Oh, okay.
In memoir, fiction, comedy, you know, here and there. So it was just serendipity that I ended up in this class. I never had thought of performance before, but it was part of the class, and, you know, part of me was like, well, I paid for it, so I guess I better get on stage, you know. I don't want to, like, bug out, you know, and
sure.
Give up, quit before I'm done, so I did it.
And that was how long ago?
That was 2019.
Wow. So what did you write? And were you surprised by getting such an immediate response so soon after taking the class?
I was, actually. That was pure serendipity. What I meant to write, what I had, you know, vaguely in my mind, that was that I wanted to make people laugh.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking of doing a bunch of cab stories because I'd been a cab driver. You know, it morphed into something else, a little bit more personal, a little bit more personal.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's how it started.
Okay. So was this the story that you wrote in 2019, or was it?
So the story I wrote in 2019 sort of starts out this piece.
Okay.
Because the classes, the performances are 15 to 20 minutes. It's a limit of at most 20 minutes.
Okay.
So I developed this over a number of years in different classes that I would take with David Ford still. And then just ended up with a longer show and put it together.
Okay. And the show is called Night Driver.
Yeah.
And I read a little bit of the premise. It's like you're a princess who's you're a princess who drives a cab at night?
Well, I'm an immigrant from Hong Kong.
Okay.
And my life in Hong Kong was very different. So, you know, I came from a wealthy family. And and then we moved here because there was a financial setback for my family.
Okay.
So, you know, things changed. And, you know, just life here is different, and I went my own way, sort of.
So, how old were you when your family moved here?
I was 15.
Oh, okay. So you were pretty, like when you moved here, was there a huge culture shock?
Yes, in some ways, and no in others, because I was pretty I mean, we got American programs and British programs, mm-hmm. TV programs in Hong Kong. So, you know, The Man from UNCLE, you know, and the music, uh-huh. you know, Soul Train, whatever, you know, we got that.
Soul Train?
Oh, yeah,
Hong
Soul
Kong?
Train.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Ed Sullivan Show, uh-huh. All of that. So I was familiar with the music very much into the music. And, you know, and I read magazines, so I knew what was going on.
Okay.
You know, Summer of Love and all that.
Did your parents know what was going on?
I don't really know. Oh, I mean, okay. they must have known.
Okay.
But I don't know if they knew as much as we did.
Okay.
So, in that way, it wasn't a huge culture shock. In other ways, you know, just differences in how people are,
mm-hmm.
the schools. Really, part of what I talk about is how many drugs there were in high school.
Yeah, that seems to be an unavoidable part of American culture is the drug abuse in schools.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we didn't have that in Hong Kong, you know. And the individualism was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Exciting. You know, yeah.
So you talk about once you got here, you went your own way. And one of the, what seems to be a reoccurring theme with immigrant families with kids is that there, you know, there's this sort of fracture because the kids are more American, more individualistic. So was that something that happened in your household, or was it much easier to go your own way without resistance?
I can't say. Let me think. I guess it was not that hard. My parents were actually adjusting to their new life.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't have a lot of bandwidth
to
figure out what the hell we were doing. You know, and they didn't have any idea what was going on in the schools. And I didn't really come home and say, hey, guess what I was offered today, you know?
Okay. No, that's something you keep to yourself.
Yeah, yeah, you know. So, yeah, in that sense, they sort of, you know, I mean, before they didn't really have to keep an eye on us because there wasn't a whole lot going on that could have led us astray, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they were dealing with their own stuff.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. So let's fast forward. You say you drove a cab in addition to doing coding or
no, that came after.
Oh, wait.
That's part of my show, just kind of how I made the transition.
Okay. All right. We'll talk a little bit about the show then.
So it's really an autobiographical piece about, you know, growing up in Hong Kong. It's a lot about my mother. It's about mm-hmm. me and my mother.
Mm-hmm.
I have siblings, but, you know, I talk about them a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about me and my mother growing up in Hong Kong, making the transition to the States, going to school here. Moving to San Francisco with my boyfriend and then starting to drive a cab
mm-hmm.
and getting into the gay scene, you know, because I was here, probably moved here in 75.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was very different then.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of freewheeling and kind of wild.
Sure.
And I just started driving a cab because I had dropped out of college. So, and I couldn't, I wanted more freedom in my job,
mm-hmm.
you know, instead of having to show up at 9 o'clock.
Okay.
Which I seem to have had a problem with, you know, dressed up for work and stuff, right? And I wasn't making all that much money. It was like, you know, it seems, as I say in my show, it seems, you know, that I have to be there on time in office attire. And it seemed a lot to ask for $500 a month.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's how I started driving a cab because somebody said, I met somebody who drove a cab
mm-hmm.
and it sounded really appealing. So I thought, well, I'll try it.
So you must be a people person because to me, having to interact with people regularly like that does not sound appealing.
I didn't I wasn't not a people person, but I wasn't particularly a people person. Uh-huh. I was just thinking of the freedom it would offer me.
Oh, okay, okay.
In terms of, you know, what time I got to work, what I was wearing, and what I got to do after I got the cab, you know. So that was the appeal. The people part, sure. I like to say that I can talk to anybody for an hour.
Okay.
And it probably came out of cab driving, you know. But there was a point where I thought, oh God, you know, I don't want to deal with them, you know.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
Actually, I got high a lot when I was driving because then I would just zone out, you know.
Okay.
It didn't affect my driving, but it affected other things. But it affected my short-term memory. But then I would just zone out because then people wouldn't bother me. What I learned was that I'm a bit of a hothead. But what I learned was that when some people get drunk.
Uh-huh.
And they want to pick a fight.
Oh. Okay.
And not to give in to that, not to be at the effect of that, right?
Okay.
Not to go with it and just be roped in. So that's part of my strategy was like to zone out sometimes so that people didn't bother me.
Okay. Okay. Now you mentioned that the show is about your relationship with your mom, but how does that how does that dovetail with driving a cab?
Well, not necessarily dovetail with it, but it's about my mom in that we both had to adjust to a new way of life.
Okay.
And the cab driving was, you know, not something that any parent wants their daughter to do.
Sure.
For the most part,
I can see
right?
That. Yeah.
You know,
yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
like, really? Well, you know, actually, my father once told me, why don't you just get a job at an insurance company like everybody else, you know, like that? And I said, no.
See, now that's a parent I recognize. You know, my mom's like, oh, why don't you work for PG&E? And I'm
yeah.
like, I don't want to work for PG&E. So I totally get that.
Yeah, something, you know.
Mm-hmm. Reliable.
Reliable,
stable.
Safe, you mm-hmm, know, mm-hmm. Conventional. Something they could maybe tell other people, this is what my daughter's doing, right?
Mm.
So so it's kind of like a parallel story in terms of adjusting to, you know, my journey and her journey
mm-hmm.
and then coming together sort of at the end.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I'm glad that happened. Are your parents still alive?
No, they're not.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
But you did find, like, you came to a meeting of the minds near the end?
I think, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think they kind of knew that they really couldn't control me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just going to do what I was going to do. And so there wasn't a lot of conflict in that sense. I didn't have to argue about it. And they didn't bug me about it. But mm-hmm. I knew they were worried.
Sure.
They
sure.
weren't happy about it.
But they had to admire your strong streak of independence, like the fact that they knew they couldn't control you because sometimes people would try.
I don't think they admired that. I think they just gave into it.
Ah, okay. Okay. How do your siblings respond? Did your siblings have a similar arc? Or?
You know, we're all spread out. This is a very Hong Kong thing, the diaspora, even for the family. We all stayed where we landed.
Mm-hmm.
I started out in L.A., but my brother's still there, and
okay.
he started out there. But I moved here. My sister started out in upstate New York, and she moved to New York City. And my other sister was in Vancouver, and she stayed there.
Okay.
So we're all spread out, although albeit in desirable cities to visit, except for maybe L.A. But so, you know. What was their reaction? I don't know that I got much of a reaction. It was like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what you're doing.
Yeah, that's, I don't know. You know, I think we were all busy doing whatever we were doing.
They didn't have time to obsess about what everybody else was doing. It's just like, oh, that's what you're doing. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Very nice.
And recall, phone calls were very expensive then.
Uh-huh.
I mean, to call New York would be like $3 a minute. Remember? So, it's like, it's not like you hang on the phone and say, what you've been doing.
Sure, sure, sure.
And
sure,
you didn't
sure.
write letters, right? That would be kind of a little weird when you're a teenager. And so, you know, we didn't necessarily keep that much in touch.
I understand. I understand. So the show is called Night Driver, and it's already open, yes?
Yes, yes.
So for our listening audience, when and where for the Night Driver?
Okay, it's every Saturday for four more Saturdays. The last Saturday is April 5th, mm-hmm. 8 p.m. at The Marsh.
Okay, and where's The Marsh?
The Marsh is on Valencia Street between 21st and 22nd Streets, mm-hmm. Easily accessible by BART.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And how do people get tickets?
They can get tickets at themarsh.org. I think themarshsf.org.
Okay.
And there might be a discount code on Facebook. I can't think of what it is right now. And I'm also actually going to be in San Leandro Library the 29th and the 30th.
Oh, very nice.
For the Best of SF series.
Ooh.
Now that show, you'd have to contact the organizer for tickets because I think that's a subscription show.
Okay.
But and that's 2 p.m. on Saturday and Sundays, March 29th and the 30th at the San Leandro Main Library.
Okay. And if people want to know more about what you're doing, do you have a web presence at all?
No.
No? They just have to divine it through the cosmos.
Yeah. I'm largely, you know, kind of... I'm new at this.
I understand. Well, Pearl Ong, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. So nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Okay, people of Earth, this is your opportunity to go check out Night Driver at the Marsh here in San Francisco. And don't forget, KPOO is a listener-sponsored radio station. We're able to stay on the air through your very generous tax-deductible donations. And you guys were really generous over the holidays. So again, we thank you so much. Coming up in just a little bit, we're going to be talking about the Greek Film Festival. So... stay tuned.
Hello there, mine's been a long time. How am I doing? Well, I guess I'm doing fine. It's been so long. And it seems like it was only yesterday. That's the same thing that you told me. It was only yesterday. Our time just slips away. And sometimes I have to say, gotta go now. I guess I'll see you somewhere around. But you, oh, you know.
I'll be back in town. Oh, maybe tomorrow.
I want you to please remember,
remember
what I told you, what I told you,
that in time you're gonna pay.
Hey.
That's Al Green, and funny how time slips away. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. Who's about to touch your mind right now? Well, the Greek Film Festival will be happening. Here to talk about it, I'd like to welcome both the executive director and the co-director of the film festival, Maria Nikolakakis and Cleon Skortes. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us on.
Thank you for being on the show. Now, where do I want to start? When I was a kid, I loved Greek music, and so I would go to the library and check albums out, learn how to say it, then go back to school, sing it to my Greek friend, and she would correct my pronunciation and tell me what it meant. Because this is to say that I love the Greek language and Greek music and all of that stuff. So tell our listening audience, like, what was it that made you guys decide to put together a Greek film festival?
Sure. Thank you. Cleon, do you want to go first?
Sure. We're members of the Modern Greek Studies Foundation,
mm-hmm.
and we were trying to find a way to raise funds because we support different programs at the UC Berkeley,
mm-hmm.
The chair in the Greek chair there, and we wanted to do something differently than the standard in either the restaurants or food or dances, and we thought a good way artistically to do that was to do a film festival, and that was 22 years ago.
Wow.
And we're still running, and we're the longest Greek film festival in the United States.
Now, when you first were doing it, did you have any idea, like, how long you guys would be doing it? Or was it just like, did you think it would be a one-off?
We thought we'll do it maybe a couple times, 2-3 times, and here we are 22 years later, and we're still plugging away.
Nice.
Yeah, we're all volunteers in this role. It's definitely a labor of love, and the community really likes it. So it's a great thing.
So do you remember, like, your first festival, like what the movie or what any of the movies were that you showed?
Oh no, I don't remember the movies. I mean, they're all the movies. They're current for the particular season.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the movies, all the movies that come with English subtitles, so people that don't speak Greek or understand Greek, they can enjoy them because they have subtitles.
Okay.
And
yeah, we've had hundreds over the years. This year, you know, we got, you know, we are open for film submissions every year. And this year we got over 380 qualified films that were submitted to us.
Wow.
Those films all went through a review process.
Uh-huh.
And then we have selected and curated the final, we have 31 films, I believe, both in person and online. So we have an in-person a program that starts this Saturday and will run until the following Saturday.
Uh-huh.
It's held at the Delancey Street Screening Room on the Embarcadero. And we show one feature film and one or two, depending on the day and time or length of the short. You know, one or two shorts a night. The short precedes the feature film. And we do that every night for the 8 nights during our in-person festival. And I want to let all the viewers know that our program this year mm-hmm. is also available online. So the entire lineup of our in-person program will also be available online, in addition to 13 documentaries that are only available online.
Wow.
Just because it's kind of, just because of the format of them, it's hard to put documentaries in the in-person program.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So if you can't come to the theater, you can enjoy these films from the comfort of your couch at home. So, you know, we definitely encourage people to do that if they can't come out.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about some of the shows that we will be seeing, some of the movies.
Sure. So we have a mix of different genres.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of them are dramas. A lot of them are sometimes, you know, we get a lot of historical fiction.
Mm-hmm.
We have a couple of more lighthearted ones this year. Sometimes, you know, we don't have a lot of comedies. You know, art reflects life. And sometimes I just think lately Greeks are not in a very comedic mood.
Oh, okay.
So we have, gosh, there are different types of dramas talking about all sorts of different issues, right? Complexities of the society, issues that people are dealing with. They touch on issues like refugees and immigration and racism and sexism. And just we have a short on femicide, unfortunately. We have a short on homosexuality. We have a short on, you know, just kind of about issues that some refugees are feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So, and really, we really try to make, you know, we try to put a very diverse program together.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think we've done that. I mean, would you agree, Clown?
Yeah, but we've done that. You know, a lot of also have to do with family, the dynamics within family members, how they, you know, one of them does something that the family doesn't like and breaks away and goes away, and how, if they're going to meet, how they're going to meet. So there's dynamics on that. And all those are very important. Another thing that is important, you know, I don't know if you're aware of this, of the Delancey screening room,
mm-hmm.
Which is, I think, is a very strong part of San Francisco, which is part of the Delancey Foundation. And we've been doing our festival in there for, like I said, 22 years now. And that's another way that we support indirectly that San Francisco program, which is a very, very strong program in the area. And so it's a win-win situation for all of us.
Very good, very good. Tell me a little bit about the movie Greek Mothers Never Die.
Yeah, so Greek Mothers Never Die is made by... So that one is in... English, it's in English, so it's not in Greek.
Okay.
So just a bullet point, all of our films, most of our films are in Greek.
Mm-hmm.
So they're in Greek with English subtitles.
Mm-hmm.
This one is in English, and it is done by a girl who was born in Greece, but then came to the United States when she was young.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting play on kind of like the role of the Greek mother.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good one. It is, it's lighthearted. It has a message. I think it's, you know, she kind of plays on the stereotype of the Greek mother, but she does it in a very caring way, and there's definitely a message at the end. So
now what is the stereotype of the Greek mother?
Well, basically the Greek mother, it doesn't matter how old you are,
uh-huh.
she always treats you like her baby. I mean, that's one way to put it.
Okay.
She want to make sure that when you go outside that you have your jacket with you, that you wear warm clothes, that you're being fed, that you're okay and everything is okay. And if she doesn't do that, she will do what she thinks is correct for you, regardless if you, you know.
Yeah.
If you
but kind of like this loving but overbearing mom that is kind of, you know, never lets you really grow up because she wants you to go this path or that path.
Okay.
And, but it's really, once you watch the film, you kind of get a perspective of where also she's coming from, right? So it's kind of this idea of like, you know, why one generation does one thing and then they pass it on to the next.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's almost like this cycle, but it comes to, I personally think it comes to a nice conclusion. So, yeah.
Right. Now, for each of you, is there a movie that you are hoping that people get to see because maybe it won't get the same kind of traction that other movies or shorts might get?
Go ahead, Maria.
Oh, go ahead, Clint. Oh, I was just going to say, you know, pretty much all of our films are in that bucket, I would say, because if they're a film that is very popular and has a huge distribution and is making it around the world already, then mm-hmm. they kind of already have made it. They don't need our festival necessarily.
Got it.
So I would say all of our films I would put in that category.
And how about you, Scortis? Or Cleon?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Is there a film that you're hoping that other people see? You know, you're like, oh, if there's one thing to see, I hope they see this.
Yeah, that's a very trick question, because sometimes people ask you, which is your favorite movie? But the thing is, a lot of movies are different.
Yeah.
They're favorite for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we watch the movies, we watch them to make sure that we're looking from a different point of view. We want to make sure that the subtitles are correct. We want to make sure that the angles are correct, that the film was filmed okay, that it has something to say. And it could be a various things. You know, sometimes I might like, you know, horror movies, but doesn't mean necessarily that somebody else likes horror movies. So all our movies we try to bring in, we try to be a variety of different movies, not all the same thing, because we're not a festival in general, not a specific type of the festival. Mm-hmm. We're not like, for example, an ecology festival. We're just a film festival in general. And we're trying to bring all those different movies so people can enjoy them and see it. And also we're trying to bring movies that will make them a little bit, not uncomfortable, but we're pushing the envelope a little bit for them to put them a little bit outside of the comfort zone to see a movie, what's happening in the real world outside there.
Okay, well then with that in mind, can you give our listening audience a little bit of information about some of the documentaries?
The documentaries are on online,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of them has to do, not a lot of them, some of them, it has to do with the migration that happened in Greece, because if you remember historically, Greece was a country that people would depart Greece to go to other places for a better life. They would leave Greece and they go to Germany, they go to Australia, they go to the United States
mm-hmm.
To have a better life. And then all of a sudden, in the last 15 years, Greece became a place where people will come to Greece for a better life.
Mm.
And Greece was never used to that. It was like, wait a minute, we live to go outside to get a better life and you're coming to Greece to have a better life? So it was a 180 degree, you know, of what used to happen. So there's a lot of movies of that intent, how people try to survive in
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm.
We also have movies about the that has to do with the LGBTQ community, how people can see them one or the other, you know, how that affects with religion, you know, and how people deal with that, being very religious, and yet they have to accept a member of the family that is not part of the religious thing, but yet is a member of the family. We have documentaries that has to do with a person that was in Los Angeles, Hollywood, that had to do with a very famous Greek lady that she was part of they used to do the costumes for many, many films, including
mm-hmm.
anywhere from starting from the Chinatown all the way to current movies. So you can see there's a gamma variety of documentaries that people can choose.
Okay, all right. Well, when does this festival start? How long does it run? And how can people get tickets?
Sure. So our festival in person opens this Saturday, March the 15th, and will run until the following Saturday, March the 22nd.
Mm-hmm.
Our online festival is going to run a little bit longer than that. It's going to run until, it will also open on the 15th, and will run until April the 5th.
Mm-hmm.
So you do have a longer time to watch those films. And would also like to say, if you do watch it online, please
mm-hmm.
make sure you vote. There is a voting option in there
mm-hmm.
because we do honor, we do give out the audience favorite award,
okay.
And we're going to do one for the online program as well as in person.
Okay.
In terms of how do you get tickets, all of that information, as well as a list of all of our films and a description of all of our films, is available online at our website at grfilm.com.
grfilm.com. All right. And if people want to know about what you guys are doing throughout the year, is that also the same place that they go?
Yes. Go to our website and also follow us on social media. We try to put all of our events on our Facebook page as well as our Instagram page. So just search San Francisco Greek Film Festival and it'll take you there and follow us. And you will be updated.
Excellent. Now, before we go, Maria and Cleon, is there anything you want to make sure our listening audience knows about the festival?
Yeah, I'd like to say also that we have about four or five directors. They're going to be here presenting their movies. That they're going to do, before the movie, they're going to do an introduction to the movie, what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of the movie, we'll have a live Q&A with the actual directors of the film. And that always adds a different level of people seeing the movie, why they did a certain thing, because they have directly communication either with the director or movies. We have the leading actor or actress that they're coming to do that.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And we can find out which movies those are online, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Maria?
Yeah, I would say, come with an open mind. These are modern Greek films,
mm-hmm.
So be ready to be perhaps surprised or ready, maybe pushed a little bit, as Cleon mentioned earlier. They're not necessarily films that perhaps our parents watched many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You're definitely a reflection of modern society right now. So come in with that lens and enjoy the process. It's really a lot of fun.
All right. Well, Maria and Cleon, I want to thank you both for being on the show today.
Thank you for having us.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Okay, people of Earth, Greek Film Festival. You don't want to miss it. It's going to be awesome. And in keeping with my love of Greek music, this, my friends, is Siko Horepse Kuklimou.
Πρέπει λίγο να χάρουμε Νίνα Νάι για βρούμε Νίνα Νάι Νάι Όπα Νίνα Νίνα Νάι Νίνα Νάι Νάι Νίνα Νάι για βρούμε Νίνα Νάι Νάι Όπα Νίνα Νίνα Νάι Νίνα Νάι Νάι Νίνα Νάι για βρούμε Νίνα Νάι Νάι
Yes, my friend. Psikohorepsikuklimo. That's the first Greek song I ever learned. That's Stelios Kazantidas. I'm messing up the name, but I love the song. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. Who's about to touch your mind right now? My friend. You know how I love me some Wee Players. And they do this amazing show, Macbeth, and they've done it at Fort Point, and it's awesome. And here to talk about it, Ava Roy, hello.
Hello. Hello, hello.
How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm good. I'm just coming off of 4 days straight working at Fort Point under the Golden Gate Bridge. So I'm a little windswept and a little tired, but excited to be here and talk about this exciting show.
Well, before we talk about the show, how long have the Wee Players existed?
Ooh la la.
It's been
a
while.
We are celebrating our 25th anniversary this spring.
Wow, that's crazy.
Which is quite a feat for... Quite a feat. I think theater is an adventure sport, and we kind of take it to the limit with all of our outdoor site-specific staging on islands and historic landmarks and so forth. So we're feeling pretty proud to have made it this far and that we're going strong. So 25 years this spring.
And what was the impetus for starting it in the first place?
Oh, yeah. You know, I came to California for school, and as an undergraduate, I kind of initially didn't really know how to relate to the campus that I was on until I started seeing it as a stage and kind of took Shakespeare's famous quote, "All the world's a stage," from As You Like It, quite literally, and started imagining, well, what if this campus was a stage, and what would I do, and how would I use it? And so the whole concept of Wee Players was really born out of this exploration of building a personal connection to space and starting to see everyday public spaces as potential performance spaces. And so while I was an undergraduate, I started kind of tying bodies to the sculptures and throwing banners off the clock towers and using the dramatic stairways up into the library as a setting, and then having the show move throughout the campus, kind of starting in one location and moving throughout the space, and the audience on their feet following the show as it moved throughout the environment. And really early on in those early days, circa 2000, when I started the company, you know, we'd find that audiences were joining the parade, and we'd start with one group that knew where we were going to be and where we were going to start. By the end of the show, our audiences had sometimes doubled or tripled in size as people kind of stopped what they were doing and joined us. So yeah, it was really a response to space. And while every space is different, and therefore every show is differently built for each different location, that kind of fundamental thread is still true, in that we are building things that are about kind of integrating into specific environments, be they historic sites, national park sites, public park lands. We've worked a lot with San Francisco Recreation and Parks. So every show is really built into and for a specific location.
So then talk about the location of Fort Point. Is that like, is it a national park? Is it a local park? What is it designated?
Yeah, Fort Point is a national park site, and so it's part of the greater Golden Gate National Recreation Area. And I've had the privilege to work with Golden Gate National Recreation Area since 2008, on and off over the years, although pretty consistently from about 2008 to 2015. And then we've taken a little break, so now we're back at this national park site. So the Golden Gate National Recreation Area is kind of a collection of parks that includes Alcatraz and Land's End and Fort Point and a number of other parks kind of throughout the greater Bay Area. So it's particularly exciting because we are in an interesting moment, to say the least,
yes,
in our national political climate. And for example, currently there is a budget resolution passed through March 14th. And when the government shuts down, so does our access to our national monuments.
I was going to ask you about that.
We are hoping that we will still be in rehearsal next weekend after March 14th, because it is a national park site.
Yeah.
But it is really, this is a show that we first premiered at Fort Point, actually in 2008. It was a very, very different version. And then we did a version in 2013 And actually, that year there was a government shutdown and we were shut out of the fort. So we remounted the show the following spring, 2014.
Uh-huh.
And now in celebration of our 25th anniversary, we were invited to come back by the wonderful new superintendent of our parks here. And so we're restaging Macbeth at Fort Point, although this time it is an all femme identifying cast, all femme and non-binary folks in the cast.
Uh-huh.
I myself am playing the title role, and my mentor, who first taught me everything I knew when I was 12 years old, I learned all my foundational sort of work, especially with Shakespeare, as it regards to Shakespeare, from this brilliant mentor and friend of mine named Anne Podlosny, who will be playing opposite me as Lady Macbeth.
Wow. So what, this person is your mentor. So what did they teach you about Shakespeare that cracked it open for you?
Yeah, that's a big topic. But I guess the most sort of simple way to put it, or most succinct way to put it, is that the work that that we did together was back in Massachusetts, where I grew up, and I had the privilege to grow up right literally down the street from a company called Shakespeare and Company that was founded by the visionary Tina Packer.
Uh-huh.
And I had the great privilege to work with Tina herself and a lot of the founding members of Shakespeare and Company. And Anne, my teacher and mentor, was there at Shakespeare and Company when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And Shakespeare Company would go into, still does, go into the area schools throughout Berkshire County in western Massachusetts. And they send two of their professional artists into a number of schools. And we do Shakespeare plays with them. And so the work that we do is really about a personal, emotional connection to the text.
Okay.
So there's certainly technical aspects to the work, structure of the verse, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of the things that makes Shakespeare and Company's work so special is that it's really not this kind of removed academic sense of Shakespeare. It's really this immediate, personal, visceral, emotional connection to the text. There's a real sense of that each person has to find their unique relationship to each character.
Okay.
And in some ways, I think that, you know, the foundation I got, Anne cast me as Juliet when I was 13 years old, which is how old Juliet is in the play. And so there's a way in which, you know, Shakespeare's characters are living at the absolute extremity of their being.
Mm-hmm.
And so are teenagers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And there's something quite powerful about bringing this work and this way of working in with young people who are experiencing really extreme emotions and are, engaged very deeply, at least I was at the time, in these kind of questions of self and identity and personality and who am I going to be and who am I? And so it's a very ripe time, as well as just a real privilege to work with some just uniquely brilliant artists. So she gave me a real strong foundation. I've been kind of making it up ever since.
And so so she flew out here or was already living here?
No, she lives in London and has been working in visual effects in the movie industry for the past 30 years.
Okay.
And it just was one of those magical things. There's a lot of magical things about this show that sort of centers around magic and witchcraft. And I feel quite blessed that it was just kind of one of those kismet moments where this summer we were just having a phone call and she decided to take a break and not take on another movie right away, was going on a long walk, and I was preparing the script and planning for auditions, and we ended up just having this conversation where the timing worked out great, that she has a little window of opportunity, and she, one of my board members, is able to house her here in San Francisco for the 4 months of the rehearsal and production period. So, it's quite an exciting thing that she was able to come out from the UK to be here for this spring season and our anniversary season. So there's lots of things that make this show really special. And in addition to Anne, there's a number of people involved, really brilliant actors who've been with E! Players for some of them as many as 10 or 15 years.
Who are they?
There's more recent, a few new people, but it's a really strong group of people. And again, a lot of people who've been with the company for a long time and are not just kind of family, but also have been practicing and training in my sort of specific
we players' aesthetic and practice, which has so much to do with this real embodied relationship with place.
Okay, so for our listening audience who maybe have never experienced a We Players show, what how do they prepare for going to a show?
Okay, you guys, you're on your feet. You are following the show as it moves throughout an environment. So at the very least, you must have closed-toed, comfortable walking shoes on, and you're going to be following the action throughout the environment. So it's really like you're immersed inside the world of the play. It's not like sitting in a seat watching the action somewhere over there on the stage. Now, we do provide seating. People can choose whether they want to carry a little folding camping chair around with them and be on the ground and be the the literal groundlings on the ground floor, on the ground, or to carry these folding stools that you set up behind those seated on the ground, or to carry nothing and be unencumbered and be standing room at the back. You do have some opportunity to choose and change your perspective throughout the performance.
Okay.
And then music is a big part of leading us through the space, as well as the actors themselves. Here at Fort Point, though, I will say Fort Point is as close to windy, cold, rugged coastal Scotland as we can possibly get and still be in California. So
okay.
It is literally 10 degrees colder inside the fort than just outside the fort. It is very cold and very windy.
So bundle up.
And sometimes quite wet because the fog can be like performing inside of a cloud. So it's very dramatic. It's very magical. We have the fort to ourselves. During the evening performances, it's quite a special experience. And the best way to be prepared to enjoy it is to wear multiple layers of wool and get out the gear that you would usually bring to a skiing trip. You want your hat, your gloves, your wool socks, your closed-toed shoes. You want your super-duper winter parka, and I am so serious about this.
Okay,
so those are the best ways to be prepared. Get ready to move and dress warmly.
So for people who are interested in going to see Macbeth at Fort Point, when and how do they get tickets?
Yeah, they get tickets, and please do. They're on sale now at weplayers.org. That's we as in us, you and me, and players, weplayers.org. Tickets are there. Links are there. All the info is there. All the dates are there. There's 22 performances over 6 weeks. We run Thursday through Sunday, April 11th to May 18th. All performances are at 6 o'clock. Audiences must be there by 5:30 for some important information before going into the fortress. And shows are at 6. And while I won't mention anything about ticket prices, I will say that we have adopted a tiered ticketing for equitable access style of ticketing. So there are different ticket levels that hopefully suit many different budgets. So I encourage people to go to weplayers.org to find out more.
Excellent. Well, Ava Roy, you know, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. You know how much I love your guys' show because I am one of those people that likes traipsing around with the actors. So I always enjoy it. So thank you so much for being on the show today.
You are so welcome. I look forward to sharing this version with you, Marilyn.
Excellent. All right, people of Earth, this is your opportunity to go check out Macbeth at Fort Point. All the information is right there. And hey, don't forget that if you ever hear anything on the show and you go, oh, I wish I could remember that, you can always visit our website and click on the Spinatron link. It saves shows for 2 weeks, so you can always revisit the show and hear any information that you need. It's time for me to turn over the mic to Mr. Ford, who'll be pleasuring your ear hole. So until next week, my friends, ta-ta and toodly-doo.
I only got one life to live, still got many things to say. All that I own, I will give. Every card I will play.